Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma, Stephen and James. Aotearoa New Zealand's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Tonight we chat comedy, theatre, books and Kiwi music and check in backstage at the Sound of Music. We have a busy night ahead. So thank you for joining us. Our first guest tonight is singer Sam Elliott. So to kick off the show, here is the latest from his label, Jam Henderson, Long Walk Home.
Comes up, I try and leave you. I try and leave you, and you can see it. Yeah, you can see it in my face that I'm still feeling. I'm still feeling.
And that was Long Walk Home by Sam Elliott and Jam Henderson. Welcome along to Kick Arts.
Yeah, that was amazing. It's so great to hear something by Sam, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. But before we jump over to him, Big shout out to Stephen, who of course is backstage at Playhouse Theatre at the moment with Marist College and St Peter's College production of The Sound of Music, and we're going to call him later at halftime.
We are, so they'll be into their first act at the moment.
Yeah, they will be. Very exciting. Yeah, and how's your Mother's Day been?
It was good. Yeah, it was nice. I went for a nice long walk with Mum this morning and a bit of brunch. I made the embarrassing mistake of leaving my wallet in the car. So
Mum paid for you?
Mum paid for it.
Oh, that's pretty shocking, James. Pretty shocking.
But to everyone else in the cafe, it looked like I did. Oh. So I survived.
Great.
But no, a really nice morning with Mum.
Cool.
And yours?
Well, it's been busy because we had Queen Street's Songs for My Mothers, High Tea for Mother's Day today, which was supporting mummies in need. So it was a really successful afternoon, if I must say so myself.
Awesome. Well done.
Yeah, and we managed to raise some money for mummies in need. So that was really cool. But we've got a busy night and Sam's on hold. But very quickly before we jump over to Sam in the studio tonight, joining us, we've got Kieran and Ross from The Farm. And we've also got Monty.
Hello, hi.
Fantastic.
We have a great night ahead. But going first, we are going to Sam Elliott, who joins us on the phone. Kia ora, Sam.
Kia ora, good evening. How's it going?
I'm good, and you?
Really well, thanks.
How are you, Sam?
Good, thank you, Emma. Good to hear from you.
Oh, it's a bit weird you calling me Emma. I'm not used to that.
It's not Bush.
Bush. There we go. So, tell us a little bit about the long walk home. Was it a long journey?
It's a pretty sort of a literal sort of thing. I was just kind of came up with it while walking home. The beat, it was sort of written to the sound of my shoes hitting the footpath. And that sort of, and then I went home and had a play around and got the guitars going, and sort of all just came from there.
Fantastic. And so, is this the first official EP for you?
I had one last year that came out in November. That was an EP, and this release is sort of is the first one of this year, and there'll be a couple more before the end of the year as well.
And are you recording these in your, what was it, James, that you said he'd said in his thing that you read?
Sam, I did a quick search on you and it came up.
Yeah, I recorded them in, this one was recorded between my friend's sort of home studio in Henderson and a studio called 236 Studio, which is down in Dunedin. So it was recorded sort of between there and then mixed and sort of finished off. Between myself and a guy called Peter Maltino, who's based in Dunedin, sort of over Zoom chats and things like that.
Well, because I read online that your sound is reflective of bedrooms, garages, sheds and studios. It sounded intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, lots of the sort of stuff is recorded in, or like written or recorded in the sort of... in someone's bedroom or someone's garage or something, and so it's not a flash operation. So I try and reflect that in the way the songs come out in the end, I guess.
And what about live gigging these days? How are you doing much of that?
Not at the moment. I played at Wine Cellar on Karangahape Road in Auckland in March, I think, or February. But I haven't since then. I've actually shifted down to Christchurch, so that's taken up quite a bit of my time, and I am in the process of putting a band together and playing those songs with some people and getting a couple gigs done here.
And why Christchurch?
Well, just because I sort of... I've got a lot of friends there, and it just seemed like the right place to move, and it was the right time to move because I just finished uni and was looking for the next step, and this was it.
Nice,
Sam. I'm curious because I've got no musical talent whatsoever. Like I could probably clap in time. That's about as far as I can go. But as an artist, when you release your music, what's the sort of response like? Like, how do you know your song is getting traction?
There's a few different things. It sort of depends on what your what your sort of individual thing is. Like for me, the music was playlisted on a couple of the student radio stations. It was on the Radio 1 Dunedin student radio station's top 11 chart in the last couple of weeks. So it's things, and it's sort of things like that that let you know it's made its way to people, and that people are have had the chance to connect with it a bit, I guess.
And who do you feel is your preferred audience?
Well, I guess most of my gigs have been over the last few years in a sort of university setting, being sort of based in Dunedin, and that's I guess people who are maybe between 18 and 30 is sort of the people who tend to connect with the music the most, I think.
Cool. And do you think, given that you have been in Dunedin and, you know, there's a lot of history down there of music, who do you aspire to be? Are you a future Verlaine, or are you a Chills, or who is it that
I'm funny you say Verlaine's actually, because Graham Downs, who was obviously the writer for the Verlaines, and he was one of my lecturers at uni. So he was pretty prolific in his day and night. So I guess someone like the Chills or the Verlaines, but the Chills especially, because they're still going and they're still touring. Obviously not at the moment because you can't really get anywhere, but, you know, they're still touring, they're still making music, and they've never sort of given up and made music that they didn't connect with, and they've never, I don't know, I don't really like to use the term like sold out or anything, but, you know, they've never sort of gotten away from what is really authentic for them. So I think for me, that's something I'd like to do. I'd like to sort of be able to continue putting out music, and my goal would be to have the freedom to sort of put out the music that feels right to put out.
Nice. So how do people find more out about you and follow Jam Henderson?
Sure. Well, I'm probably most active on Instagram. The Instagram being Jam_Henderson with two N's, because one N was already taken for some reason. That's probably the best place. Facebook as well, Jam Henderson on Facebook. I'm constantly sort of posting on those platforms. So if you're keen to hear a bit more, go have a read of one of those pages, I guess.
Fantastic. And we will make sure we put up Long Walk Home on our socials after the show as well. But it's been great hearing from you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks very much for asking me along.
No worries. Make sure you let us know next time you've got something coming out so we can share it.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Thanks, Sam.
Cheers, Sam. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Right. Well, there you go.
Sounds like a great young musician who's just trying and trying and getting some traction.
Yeah. No, he is a great musician. He's yeah.
And so you got a bit of history there?
Oh, yeah. I used to be Sam's high school teacher.
Oh, awesome. Yep.
So a bit of a proud Bish moment there.
Absolutely.
There you go. Bish, because that's my last name. We've got to clarify that, because people sometimes wonder why the students call me Bish. But it's Bish, short for Bishop, not Bish with a T in the middle of it.
Just in case.
There we go. But let's jump over to our studio guest now. So let's start off with Monty.
Ooh, hello. Hi there. Hi. Hey, how are we going?
Good. So tell us, who or what is Monty Montgomery?
Who or what am I?
Yeah. There you go. There's a big question.
Well, yeah, getting into the existential ones early. So I am a drag king in Auckland, and I produce a bunch of shows that showcase the wonderful, weird, queer, gender bender side of drag. Yeah, so put it that.
And you've got a show coming up.
We do, yeah. So coming up on the 20th of May, we have a show called Mengagement, which is a man pun on, obviously, the word engagement. So we've had two previous shows before this that have been fully casted as drag kings, and that was Manarchy, which was a sellout success, and then Menergy. So as you can tell, I really love the men's. So Mengagement is basically a show that is a piss take on a heterosexual favourite trash TV, you know, moment, which is The Bachelor. So instead of having one bachelorette and a whole bunch of bachelors, we have one bachelorette who is our drag queen, Yuri Guy, and a whole bunch of beautiful drag kings who are, gunning for her heart. Yeah. So instead of a rose, we have a Golden Cody's can up for grabs. So it's going to be quite interesting, as you
Golden
can imagine.
Golden Cody's.
I know. Yeah.
That's very out west rather than eastwards. And whereabouts is the show on?
So that's at Phoenix Venue on Kananga Happy Road. So it's like 258 K Road upstairs. Wonderful venue, which they host a lot of wonderful drag queen events up there. And it's actually owned by the two current RuPaul Drag Race Down Under girls. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what do you expect your audience to come away with?
Well, I create art in these shows just to really empower people to want to give it a go, honestly. Like, try, experiment with gender and see, you know, the bits that we can take from and learn from. The shows has a really large audience of, like, queer women that come and watch the shows. And, yeah, because normally, you know, drag queens are what we hear most about, obviously with the mainstream attention of, like, Drag Race and things like that. And not many people hear about drag kings, you know, not many people know what they are. But we exist, we're here, and we're creating incredible art around Aotearoa. Like, Auckland and Wellington especially have really large drag king scenes. People to feel happy and empowered and just have a laugh. It's a so much fun. It's an amazing, amazing night.
I know I had to ask last week when we had Anya in, and she mentioned drag kings. Yes. And I was like, well,
what is that?
I don't know if it is something that's known about.
Yeah, definitely. And
for someone who maybe has had no experience with it, could you give us a quick summary of what a drag king is?
Yeah, so basically, as you know, a drag queen is a man dressing up as a woman and pretending to be a woman, you know. So drag kings are women dressing up as men. So, you know, and sometimes it's a little bit, we get the short end of the stick, because women get to wear all these beautiful, big, wonderful gowns, you know, and then sometimes when you dress up as a bloke, you're wearing bloody shorts and a singlet, and you're like, oh, that's not that exciting. But we bring the camp, we bring the extravagance. As you can tell, you can't see right now at home, but I'm wearing like a bright pink suit, and this is actually something like that I would wear in my shows and in real life. But yeah, so we bring the camp, the colour, and all those wonderful kind of wholesome masculine traits, you know. It's all about the bravado, and also what you'd commonly see in one of our shows is actually a little bit, you know, a little bit of wrestling, a little bit of fighting, because what do men like to do? They like to fight sometimes, you know, now and then, a little bit of throwing some fists. So we do some wrestling, and yeah, it's an unforgettable night. Really, really is.
I love on your Instagram page, you've got some, I think it was on Instagram, or it might have been somewhere else, so I was stalking you, because I do that before the show. Some really great cowboy outfits.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
oh, yeah.
I love me a cowboy. I love camp cowboys. I'm a big fan of westerns, you know. I love this idea of this type of masculinity, as well as the costumes. I mean, I went to my first rodeo recently, which was quite exciting because I am a vegan. but there was I was down in Taupo with my partner, and there was a big sign for rodeos. And I thought, oh my gosh, I have to go. I'm wearing cowboy stuff all the time. I was wearing my boots just before. We went down to that, and that was quite exciting. It definitely gave me some inspiration for drag with the hats and the outfits and the tassels. The tassels do it for me. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see you with a really amazing sequined. If you could see Monty's shoes right now. They are the most gorgeous silver reversible. Those sequins that you go one way, it's silver, and one way, they're black. Oh, we've got getting a showing to the rest of our studio at the moment.
That'll have to go up on the
Instagram. Yeah, I'll have to take a photo of them later. Absolutely gorgeous. But I could so imagine you with a rhinestone or a sequin cowboy hat. I think gorgeous, gorgeous.
I'm a rhinestone cowboy for sure.
There we go. All right, we're going to come back to you shortly, but we're going to jump over now to hear a little bit about, because we're talking about cowboys. So farms, cowboys. Let's hear nice about Russians segue. And a farm. That's I tried nice to segue. It didn't quite work.
It's a great segue. I love it. It's a great segue from there to here.
Great. So, Ross, you're playing a New Zealand farmer called Jim.
I am. Jim Green. In a play called The Farm, which is coming on at Titirangi Theatre soon.
Cool. And that's by David Geary?
David Geary, yeah.
Great.
He's an awesome playwright. Mm-hmm. He's written an awful lot of plays, and he's currently living in Canada.
Oh,
Vancouver.
Okay. Kiwi gone to Vancouver Island.
Married a Canadian woman, so we lost him.
Oh, I see. And now you're playing Jim. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we've got your lovely wife here, who's also your director.
Yeah.
I'm liking that.
Oh, okay. Sure.
No, I wasn't sure if that was a nervous laugh.
I get to officially tell him what to do and boss him around.
I like how it's officially you get to do that. I'm sure you do that anyway, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything at this point about that, but...
Yeah, I have the marriage license that says I can, but now I get this whole other... I get to do it in the arts world as well, which is great.
So tell us a little bit about The Farm without telling us too much. I mean, I know ostriches, stags, vodka, lycra.
Oh,
did I hit the mark on all of them?
Need we say more? Yeah, it's a lovely play that David... Geary wrote. So David wrote, people may know some of his other plays, Lovelock's Dreamer. Oh, Pack of Girls is probably one of his most well-known about women rugby players. So he writes really beautiful, great plays about Kiwi life, particularly rural Kiwi life. And this is a really lovely play about a simple farming couple in the Manawatu who are about to lose their farm. Because Jim never really wanted to be a farmer. He inherited it. He had to, you know, his father died and he had to run the farm. And he's kind of run it into the ground a little bit. He's tried to diversify when things weren't working. He's kind of not got things right. And
he's hopeless, really.
But he's so lovely. And they're going to lose... With all the pressure, they're going to lose their marriage as well, probably. Oh, by the way, this is a comedy. I know it doesn't sound like a comedy at the moment, but it is a comedy, I promise you. And then this Russian couple turn up who are cycling around New Zealand and run into one of Jim's steers who's escaped from a paddock, and they end up having to just come and find Jim and Maggie and stay at their house while they recover from their injuries. And then things happen in a comedy way.
A comedy way as in a comedy British farce kind of a way?
No.
Or how would you describe the comedy of it?
Well, it's very Kiwi comedy. So it really kind of is aimed at a broad Kiwi audience. The comedy is not broad sitcom sort of style. Like I call it
intelligent comedy.
Intelligent. Mm. There's a kind of a warm drama underneath it all as well as quite outrageous characters. The two Russians are...
I guess it's kind of, there is quite a sitcom feel about it because, you know, like it is kind of a situation comedy, situation being on a farm with these Russians that turn up. So it is kind of situation comedy, I guess, in a theatrical way, in a theatre sense. And there's some very odd things that happen. And because you've got this... Kiwi farmers and these kind of exotic Russians that have arrived. So there's a clash of culture. There's a clash of, and generational as well, because Jim and Maggie are a bit older and they're trying to understand each other. There's language barrier, which always, you know, is cause for hilarity on stage. So it's very...
Issues with Lycra.
Oh, yeah, Lycra. Yeah. There's Lycra. And it is set in 1997. So it's, yeah, it's not current. And David, the playwright, did say, you know, he was going to update it some years ago. And I'm really glad he didn't, because we never get to look back at ourselves anymore. Even though we think, I mean, 1997, I don't know, to me doesn't seem that long ago. And I don't think it is that long ago. But now I'm starting to realise, you know, as I'm getting into my older years, that, I don't know, when were you born, James? What year were you born?
I'm a 94.
Ooh, just squeezed.
I wasn't going to mention that.
Yeah, just squeezed. But it's not that long ago. And yet it seems like it is when we look back. And things like, for doing the production, I keep having to say to set designer and props and costume, we can't have that because it's post-1997. So that's been a really interesting challenge for us. I mean, it's easy doing period pieces where we kind of know, but this is in between. Sort of, it's recent, but it's still not. And before cell phones, I mean, they existed, but we didn't have them. Before, everyone had laptops and internet in their homes, and so that's...
And you're on a farm.
And you're on a farm.
So for a lot of farmers, they wouldn't have had any of that kind of mod cons, no. You know, until even a few years ago.
Like, you're really isolated.
Mm.
And so I'm really glad he didn't update it, because it would have actually changed the entire story and the way the characters relate to each other.
Well, the other thing about not changing the 1997 is that Russians meant something different to New Zealanders in 97 than they do now. Like, now there's an awful lot of Russians living in New Zealand and they're just other people who've come here. But then it was like Soviet Union's only just collapsed and, yeah.
The Cold War was still...
Absolutely.
...kind of in people's
defrosting.
Minds. Defrosting. Yeah, yeah. It was, yeah, absolutely. On the bench, thawing
and,
out.
And as the director and as a performer, what do you hope your audience take away from it?
I really, especially after the, you know, 12, 18 months that we've had, I really just want people to come along and just have a really good laugh and enjoy a night out at the theatre and just be relaxed and have fun and just enjoy being in that space again, because it's been really tough for all arts, you know, we know that, but I just want them to come and have fun. And I think with this play, they'll see, you don't have to be a farmer, you don't have to know anything about rural life to actually relate to these four characters. Yeah, I just want people to come and enjoy and relax.
All right. Well, we're going to come back to you as well, but I think James might have a song lined up for us.
We have a song. It is Mother's Day by Cole Norton.
Do you think that's because it's Mother's Day?
Oh, that's a good point.
Oh, do you think that's why Stephen chose this song for us to play?
And I think that's why we're going to play it. This is Mother's Day by Cole Norton.
Mama, tell me how he looks up above. I've been thinking about you, it's been tearing me up. Mama, I don't know who else I can trust. I've been running on empty and getting stuck in the mud. I'm missing you. I just wanted to say I'm searching for you, trying to get through each day. So I hope you can hear me. I hope you're doing okay. I'm missing you. Tired of feeling this way.
trying to remember how it used to be. Life feels so strange when you're not here with me. All of the good things and bad things I wish you'd seen more of. Maybe you're out there somewhere holding me up. I'm missing you. I just wanted to say I'm searching for you, trying to get through each day. So I hope you can hear me. I hope you're doing okay. I'm missing you. Mama, tell me how it looks up above. I've been thinking about you and who you helped me become. Oh, Mama, I can't stress this enough. Even though right now I'm broken, I still know that I'm loved. But I'm missing you. I just wanted to say, if you only knew, I finally found my own way. And I know you can hear me, but at the end of each day, I'm missing you. I'm missing you.
And that was Mother's Day, a nice tribute to all the mums out there. It was really nice to see today, Emma, tributes for mums, but also, you know, the other sort of mums, the mother figures, the mums who have lost kids, those who have lost their mum, those who want to be mums. Just a really lovely, lovely post out there that I saw today.
There were some nice ones too, acknowledging the dads out there that are being mums.
Oh, totally.
As well, which was lovely.
Totally. On the phone now, we have author of Blood on Vines, a book that was released in February 2020. So good evening and welcome to Madeline Escadal.
Hello, Emma and James. How are you?
We are very well. And yourself?
I'm very well. It's been a lovely day. Thanks.
Oh, thank you for joining us.
Have you been spoilt for Mother's Day today?
I have, by both two-legged and four-legged kids.
There's nothing like four-legged kids if they give you some space and don't expect too much on Mother's Day, right?
That's right. Yes. No, it's been lovely. It's been a great day. Thank you.
Now, tell us about your book, Blood on Vines.
Well, the novel came out in March this year, so it's actually really, really new, only 6 or so weeks old. It's set up north of Auckland in Matakana wine country. It's set over a week just before the harvest. So imagine the autumnal winds sweeping over the grape-laden vines and beautiful landscapes. But underneath all of that, there's a lot of shenanigans going on. At Matakana Valley Wines, this is the vineyard we're centred. Avery and Lexi are struggling with the stress of running the vineyard, family life, teenage children, that sort of thing. Their world takes a sudden and disturbing turn when a grisly find is discovered beneath their house. And that's how it starts.
What a start.
Oh, goodness me, a grisly find. Oh, yeah. I just thought you were going to say that it was shenanigans in wine country because everyone was drunk.
No, well, there is a fair bit of wine consumed, but no, there's a lot more to it. It centres around Bill, the local cop, who's looking forward to the end of a busy summer when all hell breaks loose, sending ripples throughout the close-knit community and all that brings.
Okay, so what kind of a feel is it? Is it a thriller or is it a comedy or is it a, what is it?
it's definitely a thriller, and the neat thing is that it's got a great Kiwi twist. It's, you know, being set in New Zealand, people will recognise the language, people will recognise the places, and I think the type of people that's featured in it.
And what's the connection with Matakana?
Well, I mean, it's a place that we've spent a lot of time in, and it's such a great place, you know, not only the landscape, the beautiful beaches, the bush, the rugged coastlines, all of that. That's actually quite a large character in the book, but also the wonderful diversity of people that's up there, the winemakers, the creatives, fantastic locals. I've filled notebooks over the years of fantastic plots and things for future books.
And is thrillers your normal genre of writing?
Well, I've always loved mystery and thriller books. I've always read it. But I think I started off writing for my own children. So when they were younger, I wrote a lot of stories, short stories for them. Nothing that's been published, nothing that I've attempted to publish. But it's still sitting, and I might just do that one day. And then I think they grew up, and I thought, I'll do something that I really like. So I love mystery and thrillers. So why not set something in New Zealand? And I found this setting. So I'm very lucky, I think.
Great.
And what's coming next for you?
Well, I'm working on the next book in the series, which is called Rings on Water. It's the same policeman that's featured in his family. So his name is Bill, and it's set a little bit later in the year, so we're now in the middle of a dark and gloomy winter. He's enjoying the quiet at the Matakana police station. That's until a waterlogged body of a small-time criminal is found washed up on a nearby beach. And this, in turn, sets a series of events in motion, of course.
Wow. So is this police officer someone that you know from up there, or is there a police officer in Matakana called Bill, or was it just some random that you decided to have in all your stories?
He is made up, but there is no police station in Matakana, first of all. So that's, you know,
well, that's good to know.
Most things, they're actually made up in this book, which I think you've got to be careful. You know, it's a small community. You've got to make it fictional. But I think the inspiration behind this is probably a mixture of people that I've come across, and not perhaps only police officers, but certainly a mix of people. I mean, he's a nice family guy. You know, he's married, he's got children. He's quite content with his life, and made a conscious decision to move back to his roots, his Matakana, after working in the big cities. So and then that's where it sort of starts off. And his character grows a lot in book two, Rings on Water. We find out a little bit more why he made the move from the big cities.
Oh, awesome. And that is a beautiful part of our country. The beaches, the markets. Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
That's right.
Great. Well, thank you so much for spending some of your Mother's Day with us to tell us about your book. And, of course, Madeline's book, Blood on Vines, can be found at any good bookstores.
It can. Paper pluses, selected paper pluses, most of them, and independents.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to finding, hearing from our reviewer in a couple of weeks what they thought of your book, and then let us know when this washed up criminal happens.
It's the publisher has set the date for early next year, so I'm aiming for March.
Well, we look forward to that as well, and we'll have you back on again. You can tell us about that and tell us what's happening with Bill.
Thank you so much for having me.
No worries, see you later.
Thank you, bye.
Did you guys feel that it was a bit similar to your story? Just when she was saying Matakana and these things happening and these lovely people that run the vineyard or the farm and,
I was
and
thinking,
something happens?
What, has Kick Arts like specifically put on this
theme for tonight? Is it because it's sounding like there's a theme? But no, what I was thinking, blood on vines. That's what it's. I'm going. My brain was going tick tick tick. We need to put this on stage.
Yeah, it sounds like something that could easily be turned into a production, eh?
And we've got a director already.
And actors, yeah. And we're all go. Give us a call. What's the author's name? Give us a call. No, it sounds...
Yeah, it's great.
I'm very excited about the book. I want to read the book.
Yeah, I kind of want to read the book now too. I love that. My mind's going mad about what was the gruesome thing under the house Like, is it a body? Because... Is it a bull? I don't know. It could be a dead cow, for all we know. But Bill needs to find out.
Yeah, I want to find out about Bill. I want to learn more about Bill.
Yeah. Right, so we're going to talk more to you guys about your arts journeys now. So, Bonte, how did you get into the arts?
Well, I've always been interested in the arts from, you know, high school, and even being a child, I always loved to kind of be on stage and dance around and express myself. And then I got into drag a couple of years ago, kind of as an act of like radical self-expression, because I never did any makeup. I never was too bothered about any of that, and makeup is quite paramount to drag and performing. I kind of tripped and fell. Basically, it was I feel like it started all the way back in intermediate school, where I was in Somerville Intermediate in East Auckland, and these two boys would bully me, and they'd call me Mustache Montgomery. And I was so sad. I was so upset about that, you know, because when I was younger, you know, I had like hairy legs and I had a little bit of a beautiful mo, and a very flat chest. So I had a very boyish figure, you know. And then as I grew into myself and you know, kind of was like, who cares? I like being my hairy self and I love myself and it's fine. I grew more into, you know, women sometimes think these masculine traits are really like, you know, unattractive and we don't want to embrace them. But I kind of, as I've grown into myself, embrace the masculinity and turn that masculinity into performative masculinity with drag. And actually there was one time when I was finishing a gig and it was on K Road, and I came down and I had my huge handlebar moustache on, my great big mullet flapping in the wind, and the suit on, and I turned to my left and I saw the two boys that used to call me Mustache Montgomery on the street, and I was like, oh my gosh, these two started it all. I've got everything to thank for these, with these two. So that was quite funny. So drag, it just kind of like came from embracing my masculinity and realizing that it actually could be really funny. And it kind of gave me, because I've always wanted to be on stage, but I kind of felt like I couldn't, because I kind of felt like I always saw men on stage doing things, and I felt like I wasn't what I saw, you know. So then I thought, you know, I'll just embody a man, and then I'll take up that space, you know. So I put on a mustache and I was like, boom, you know, tricked everyone, haha, I'm not actually a man. But yeah, so that's kind of how I started with drag. And then I started dabbling with makeup, and I really liked, I kind of described myself as like a chaotic clown cowboy, you know. So now that kind of evolved into that. So that's kind of where I started.
Because your makeup is quite, that you wear when you're in performance.
Yeah.
It's quite extreme. Like, it reminds me of, like, almost a cartoonized, the look, you know, like your chiseled kind of cheekbones and things that you go for is quite full on.
Yeah. It's very, like, cowboy on, like, acid or something. It's very colourful and crazy. I like that, because I don't want to actually look like a man. I don't want to pass as like a bloke on the street, you know. I want to just kind of take all of those aspects of masculinity and just make it a lot more colourful and extravagant and, you know, just over the top, because that's what drag is. It's like taking gender and just making it like very, very over the top. It's just chaotic colour, really.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Cool. Yeah. What about you, Ross? How did you get into performance?
That's a good question. I don't know when I first knew that I was a performer at heart. I guess it was when I was at high school and being inspired by drama classes and school plays and all that kind of stuff. I didn't really think it was possible to have a career in the performing arts in New Zealand, and without struggling or whatever. So I decided I'd follow my other passion, which was education. So I trained as a teacher. And I did that for about 3 years until I realised that being a secondary school teacher is probably the hardest job ever invented anywhere.
I'm high-fiving you across the studio right now.
So I kind of gave up on that. Well, no, I didn't. I did my OE, went to London, did some drama classes over there. But just before I'd left, I did an intensive week, which was run by this old theatre company called Theatre Corporate. And fell in love with it, and I was just like floating 2 meters above the ground for a week and thought, I have to do this. So in London, I wrote to the head of Theatre Corporate, who was a guy named Raymond Hawthorne, who was became my mentor, and said, can you write me a reference, please, because I want to go to drama school. That's what I'm doing when I've finished my OE. And he wrote back and said, actually, I've just taken over the Mercury Theatre, well, the leadership of, and would you like to come be an apprentice?
Mm.
So I said, yep, I'll be back soon. And that was cool. And Mercury put me through the Theatre Corporate Drama School training program as well. So I had the amazing privilege of doing back-to-back at theatre as well as being trained. And it all paid for me, and, you know, earning money while you're doing it, which was like, wow, who gets that opportunity? So that's how I started, and I've always kind of known since I was about, I don't know, 15 or 16, that that's where I'd love to end up. Doing theatre is amazing. I hadn't even thought about doing screen because theatre is such a wonderful communal experience. Like, you find your tribe of people when you go on stage and you do drama classes. And that's how I got started, really. Did that for 10 years, going back to back. Around theatres around New Zealand, sort of living out of a suitcase, you know, a couple of years here, a couple of years there. And that's where I met my wife in Centrepoint Theatre.
Hello.
Yeah, which is in Palmerston North, in the Manawatu, where...
The Farmer's Set.
The Farmer's Set. David Geary is one of the people who kind of was big in the life around Centrepoint Theatre. And he's from Fielding, a little town out of Palmerston North. And that theatre company was sort of struggling for a while, not knowing who it was. So they were going on their own journey, and they were doing the usual mix of, you know, a West End play, a Broadway play, a small classic because they couldn't afford a large company. And then one year they just went, stuff it, let's put on a whole year of New Zealand plays. And they did. And
that was instigated by Alison Quigan.
Alison Quigan, who was, yeah, she was the... artistic director at the time, and that just took off. Everybody said it was a stupid idea. Nobody wants to see New Zealand plays. It's cringe. You do one if it's amazing, but, you know, they did a whole year, and it sold out, and it was hyper-successful, and then they did that year after year after year. That's
not your journey. That's Centrepoint Theatre's journey.
That's Centrepoint Theatre's journey. But it's kind of, it brings me back to where I am at the moment, which is doing a New Zealand play, which premiered at Centrepoint and was workshopped there a couple of times. And playing a role now, which is a Kiwi character, is very uplifting. It's kind of a side of me that I haven't explored that much. Being kind of a down-to-earth, rural Kiwi bloke is not something I am at heart, I guess, but it's a part of everyone in New Zealand. It's kind of our shared heritage somewhere. So playing that, playing around with it, having fun, creating jokes is kind of cool. Well, bringing the jokes that are written to life.
And I think, too, what you said about the good old Theatre Corporate and apprentice days, I mean, man, why don't we still have them?
Yeah.
I mean, so many people went through with Raymond Hawthorne and Theatre Corporate. And it was the way of, you know, like you said, getting paid to train.
Yeah.
I mean, God, now people train and they come out with massive student loans that they never end up paying.
Well, I mean, you can just name people, like right now, I can just go Mark Hadlow, Alison Quigan, Jennifer Ward-Leland, Michael Hurst, all through. Well, no, Michael was actually Court Theatre originally, Peter Elliott Court Theatre. But, yeah, so it was like these huge names that came out of that school and that I was desperate to go there, absolutely desperate. I applied and then that was the year they folded, so nothing to do with me, I'm sure. But
you know, how did your journey start? Give us some of your story.
Well, kind of similar. And like Monty, like intermediate was just something. I was a really incredibly shy kid, like chronically shy. I know, hard to believe now. But something happened at intermediate where I just found something, and it was an assembly. I don't know, we were doing a book fair or something, or a fair, and my class got to do the book fair side of the thing. And so we came up with an idea to promote our book fair and assembly, and I came up with this character called Timmy. I always played boys.
Yes.
And it just... Well, you know, in these days, it went viral at school, and I just became an overnight star at school. And my teachers were saying to my mother, you've got to get her into drama lessons. And I hadn't really thought, my family were a big sporting family. I had originally come from a rural area. We were in North Otago. So the arts was not in our family world at all. But I just, I don't know, I just liked, oh, but we loved things like, we loved British comedy, so we loved the two Ronnies, we loved Monty Python, we loved even people like MacPhail and Gadsby and all of that, and that was a family thing that we would do, and I had three older brothers and a sister who were quite a bit older than me, and one brother in particular, we would create our own skits and do our own stuff. And so even though it wasn't an arts family, we just kind of did muck around with that kind of thing. And
well, there was no devices as such, you know, then. Yes, you watched TV, but that was kind of like after dinner, after the dishes were done, you would sit down and we'd watch
still,
telly, right?
Yeah, and we'd still do stuff like listen to the Goons. Not that, I mean, there was television, I'm not that old, but we would still listen to the Goons or Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on the radio. And
Sunday morning radio stories.
Yeah, and so my brother and I would recreate things ourselves, and then later when I was a teenager, then the young ones hit our screens and my brother and I would do stuff like the young ones, and we would write our own stuff, and it actually, for me, he was the creative one, but he never ever went anywhere near stage or performance or anything, and he said to me, I can't do it, Kieran, but you can. And I just, yeah, then I got into drama lessons as a teenager and just couldn't get off the stage after that. And I suddenly then was not shy. My mother sent me to drama lessons to get over my shyness, and within one term, shyness had gone. But I found something else. And like you said, Ross, which I thought was a great way to put it, was tribe. You found your tribe. Mm. I did too. I found my tribe. I thought I was a bit odd. And then I found all these other people and just went, I'm completely actually okay. Because there's all you lot. And now I get it. Yes. And it's been like that ever since. And I still feel like that at 50, almost 53 years old. I know when I meet another actor, it's like, you're an actor. I can tell.
And I've known you for a few years now, Kieran, and you are just a natural actor. Like, when you arrive at a venue, the energy lifts.
Oh, really?
You're a natural performer on and off the stage.
Thanks, mate.
It's so easy to pick.
Not flashy, though, eh? You know, I don't turn up in, you know, tiaras and,
no,
and feathers,
no,
or anything.
But the spark's in the eye. You know, you are ready to perform wherever you are, which is awesome.
Thanks, mate. Oh, I'm a bit humble. Oh,
no, awesome.
Oh, I really feel like it's Mother's Day now. Can you be my son, James?
And that was lovely listening to all of you. We've got a bit of time coming up soon because I think we're going to dig a bit deeper into some of those stories. But Emma, do we have some notices for the week?
Some bulletins. We do, yeah.
Bulletins.
So, Tobacco have sent us some bulletins to let us know that Into the Bush is coming up. And guess what? Into the Bush stars Monty. There we go. So Into the Bush, as we heard last week from their director, is on the 13th to 16th of May, and you can get tickets through Tibbac. And Anya is also running a free circus and theatre workshop for Rainbow Youth aged 13 to 24. It's a physical theatre movement, acrobatics and tumbling basics, Clowning 101, happening on the 15th and the 16th of May in association with Rainbow Youth. So you may remember last week that Anya was here from Butch Mermaid Productions. So, yeah, check out four free workshops that will give young people the opportunity to try some circus and theatre techniques as seen in Into the Bush. So there you go. And then on the 23rd of May, they've got Aspire, which features dancers aged 60 to 85 years in a powerful display of the benefits of creative aging. How's that? I want to creatively age. I think that sounds fantastic. So the show will feature 10 senior dance groups showcasing Maori, Chinese, flamenco, rock and roll, contemporary and jazz dance. Aspire will truly show the world, well, a small part of Auckland and especially the dance community, that one is never too old to dance. So that sounds fantastic. So you can find out more. Oh, and you can find out about Tibbac's Term 2 classes by jumping on to their website. So that's Tibbac. Now, Bach Musica NZ takes to the stage with Mozart's Requiem. That is happening sometime. Oh, I'm scrolling. Should have read these. 13th of June in the Great Hall at Town Hall. So you can check out that at www.bachmusica.com. And finally, Shall We Dance? Pacifica Dance Festival 2021 goes national. So, June, so we've got a little bit of time to think about going national. June the 20th and the 21st, oh, the 1st to the 29th. Ah, 2021, that's not the 20th and the 21st. June 2021, from the 1st to the 29th, is Pacific Dance Festival. Stepping fully into stage lights is Aotearoa's national organisation for dance, Pacific dance artists. The Pacific Dance Festival is hitting the road in 2021, expanding to four venues around Auckland this June and visiting art festivals around the country with the world-class performances this year. And you can check more out about all of that on their website, which is www.pacificdance.co.nz.
Thank you, Emma. Lots going on, as always. After this quick song break, we are going to check in backstage live with the director and two cast members. But for now, we have...
Of the Sound of Music.
And from The Sound of Music, we now have Something Good. Apologise that we are interrupting this song, but we are going live backstage to the Playhouse Theatre in Gleneden in West Auckland. We have on the line the director, Stephen Dello, David Fromont, who's playing Captain Von Trapp, and Sophia Loft, who's currently playing Maria. They are in the middle of intermission. Kia ora, team.
Oh, kia ora koutou, James and Emma. How's it going tonight?
Oh, well, you know, James is doing a great job. You might be done out of a job, dude.
Oh, this is, only the second time in 12 months I'm not sitting here with you, Emma.
I know, but it's nice to be able to ring you backstage.
Yeah, absolutely. We've just had a wonderful act, one of Sound of Music, here at the wonderful Playhouse Theatre.
And what's the vibe like backstage right now?
What's the vibe? Well, they're all really quiet at the moment, staring at me, which is unusually quiet, so maybe we could do this radio interview every interval.
Oh, well, it might be a good way to keep them quiet, right?
Yeah, no, fantastic. We have three casts, so 120 kids involved, plus stage crew and a wonderful band, and a fabulous team tonight who are on their second performance of a run of 12.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. And you've got David, who's playing Captain Von Trapp, and Sophia with, and who's playing Maria with you right now?
I do have David and Sophia with me right now.
Team, it's a Sunday night, school day tomorrow. How's our energy levels?
Not going to be as good tomorrow, frankly. But no, it's everyone seems quite excited. It's very active down here backstage, so yeah, high energy on stage and back.
And David, this is your last year, isn't it?
No, I still got 1 year left in me.
Oh, well,
they're
there
still
you
going to get roped in for another year.
Well, that's positive. I was going to say, how does it feel to be in your last year, but you've got one more year.
No, not quite.
And what's the highlight of playing the captain?
He's just a really interesting character emotionally. The last few shows I've done, my characters have been quite simple and easier. At the very least, I've got like two main emotions they ever show. But no, this year I get to really dig deep into what kind of character he is and explore what kind of experiences like built him and makes him who he is on stage.
Awesome. And Maria, what's it like playing the, I suppose, the star of the show?
It is totally insane, but I love it crazily. It's really amazing. It's indescribable, really, yeah.
And who's your favourite Maria, if you were to be inspired by someone that's played the role before, who would be your go-to Maria?
Definitely Julie Andrews, yeah. 100%.
And we've actually dedicated the whole season to Christopher Plummer, who passed away during the run of rehearsals.
Right, yeah, a bit of a legend in his own right.
Absolutely, 100%.
And how are you feeling, Stephen? You're, a couple of shows in. How's your energy levels going?
Slightly exhausted, but hopefully no one at work's hearing that, 'cause it's a big day tomorrow. Obviously for crew and band, you know, they're here 12 shows plus all the dress rehearsals, but our cast have managed to have a little bit of time off in this run. Having three casts means more people get an opportunity, but obviously off stage, everyone's got to still be here each time. So it's a big, big ask and a big expectation, but everyone's still smiling.
And that's one of the big things about community and school theatre, eh? Everyone else keeps going. Everyone still goes to work, everyone goes back to school the next day.
100%. And I must acknowledge the people here at Playhouse Theatre. They have gone out of their way to help us, building sets, organising things at the last minute. It couldn't have been more accommodating. It's a bit of a return home for me after 20 years, having lived in this place for nearly 10 years from my teens and 20s. And it's just so cool to see that vibe is still here where everyone pitches in.
Fantastic. And how do people go about getting tickets for the show, Stephen? Because I know some of the shows are sold out.
They are. So we still have performances available with tickets Monday through Thursday this week. Then the end of our run is sold out. Head to trybooking.co.nz.
Fantastic. So how much longer until you get your two-minute call?
We're probably about 5 or 10 minutes off. So these two are running now to go and get back into their costumes, ready to sing their heart out for Act Two and entertain our audience, which so far has been had a mix of laughter and tears at the right times. Good tears, happy tears.
And a very proud director.
Oh, 100%. These guys have worked so hard. We put the show together in a small time frame this year, with COVID last year having such a huge impact on our school. We've got a nice and quick year before the winter bug season comes along and people have to be kept away with every cough and sneeze. So they've worked super hard. I couldn't be prouder.
Fantastic. And of course, proud dad today too, being your daughter's birthday. Is she on?
Yeah,
is she in the cast?
My daughter's birthday. She's on stage as Liesl tonight.
Is she blushing right now in the green room?
She is blushing while chewing something. Yeah.
Happy birthday, Katie.
Oh, no.
All right. Well,
you guys carry on back there, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Sunday.
No worries at all, Stephen. Have a good one.
Awesome. Thanks for giving us a call, team.
No worries. See you later.
Well, I hope we just haven't broken some cast members' focus backstage.
Look, they're on interval. Every kid will have broken focus right now, let's face it.
Okay, if there's mistakes in the second act, we're not going to be responsible.
It's not our fault, no. It's Stephen's fault for telling us to call him backstage. No.
And Stephen's a very professional director, so they'll be back in focus.
Oh, big time. They'll be trilling down right now. So, jumping back to our in-studio guests. We've got these kind of core questions that we ask our guests. We're going to actually start at the other end. So
that's me, that's Karen. She's looking at me.
So if you could go back in time and tell your 16-year-old self something, what would it be? And I'm not going to ask you the same question because you're too close, Monty, to 16, so I can't ask you that.
You don't know that. Oh, thanks, Emma. What are you saying? What would I say to my 16-year-old self? Go for it. Do exactly what you've done, but don't be so scared. Don't be scared of asking questions. Don't be scared of getting things wrong. Just don't be scared. Just go for it. But yeah, do what you've done. Just keep doing it.
Nice. What about you, Ross?
Well, yeah, 16, that was a long time ago. I think I would tell my 16-year-old self to be brave, to not judge yourself, to not be constantly wondering if that inflection and that line was perfect, for example, as an actor. But, yeah, just to have more self-confidence and not judge yourself all the time.
Do you think that judging comes through because of your training? Because, I mean, I've done classes with Raymond as well, you know, and it is very, you know, at the starting stages, it is quite prescriptive sometimes, isn't it? And we do have to think about, oh, if I inflect that way, well, then it means I'm implying this, and if I inflect that way, then it implies. But then if we...
It is a bit of a double-edged sword as an actor, as a performer, not just as an actor, that we do have to be our own director. We do have to have that director side of ourselves, but there's a difference in not judging yourself as a person, Ross? Is that?
Absolutely. I think there's, as a person and also as someone in the arts, judging your artwork, and when you're an actor or a performer, that artwork is yourself. So you've got your own clay, kind of to speak. But, yeah, I don't know if it's to do with the training as much as it is to do with just my personality. That's the kind of guy I am. I'm in my head a bit. I'm a bit self-judgmental. And overcoming that is the key to being a relaxed, spontaneous performer. And I'm really an envy of those people who are naturally relaxed and spontaneous. It's amazing. Yeah, that's what I tell my 16-year-old self.
Have you found that you've potentially got more judgmental as you've got older? I mean, I know myself as a performer, I'm now more anxious and judgmental than I ever was as a teenager of my own performance.
Yes and no. I think I'm more raw now than I was once, which is a good thing. That's kind of spontaneity. But, yeah, you can get more anxious as you get older because you just realise how much there is to worry about.
I've kind of gone the opposite way. Maybe it's a... maybe it's a female thing, but obviously not because, Emma, you've gone the other... I find I've let go. I've done the frozen thing. I've done the whole let it go, and it's so freeing. But I have gone back to improv, so I've recently started to do a lot of improv work again, and so that's helped me. I really just go, look.
You can't plan anything, can
you? It's not going to get any better than this.
You go.
Yeah, and also it's not going to get any better than this. Like, this is what I do, so That's it. Yeah, I've just stopped judging completely and just started enjoying it and not thinking about it that way.
Nice.
It's almost
really great.
Because as from a perspective looking at teenagers, you know, I see them as possibly being at their most anxious and self-conscious phase. So the hope is that over time they grow resilience, they grow confidence. But then it's interesting to hear how it can go either way and at different parts. Would you say you're only conscious and anxious around your performance, Emma, or is that in the sort of other parts of your daily life?
No, I think it's probably in lots of parts of my life, but a lot of that comes down to being the busy person that I am and the stress levels and the things that I deal with.
Yeah, having lots of balls in the air and...
Which adds to anxiety of when are you going to drop one of those balls, you know?
Right. Which adds to that as well.
Yeah. And because you're also a bit of a perfectionist.
Oh, I am.
So that also adds to...
It is. Being a Virgo that wants everything absolutely perfect is pretty difficult at times. But anyway, we're not talking about me. We're going to talk about Monty now. Hi, Monty.
Hello.
That was my quick transition to you. So, I mean, if you want to answer your 16-year-old question, you can. But the other question we often ask is in 10 years' time, so you're a little bit older...
Yeah.
How are you going to know that you have been successful?
Oh, I actually asked myself this question the other day. So
there you go.
And I asked the opposite question about the 16-year-old stuff. I actually had that thought today when I bought two more items of pink clothing and I thought, dang, my 16-year-old self would have loved me now. Like, she would have just looked at me and been like, yes, we're going in the right direction. in 10 years' time, I want to see myself still doing what I'm doing on a crazier, bigger level. Like my plan at the moment, you know, we're doing a lot of these smaller cabaret style shows that are going really well with Drag Kings, and drag is a really interesting art form because it doesn't really, you know, we don't have big rehearsals up until the show. Basically, like, we get a bunch of drag performers together, and the first time that I see their performance is actually on the night on the stage. So it's very, very different to, like, you know, the big rehearsal schedules of having like a big theatre show. But my plan for the next couple of years is to, I'm in the midst of writing a show that I really want to kind of, you know, bring to that next level and have it, you know, it's basically going to be a drag king show that has to do with the issues that we face, but to present it in a really comical, fun way and to use the whole wrestling aspect as well. So basically we're going to fight these three main issues that we constantly like come up against, which is other drag queens, because it's, you know, there is like misogyny within our community because I'm literally playing a boys game, you know, like it's a boys club doing drag. The second one is being on your period, so we're going to fight a giant period. And then the next one is RuPaul from RuPaul's Drag Race, which is, you know, a little bit of like a homage to, you know, the mainstream drag industry. So like, you know, in 10 years' time, I want to have produced some bigger shows on a bigger platform, on a bigger stage, and really bring drag kings up until the level that drag queens are right now, you know. And right now it's happening, the ball is rolling, it's moving, and we're starting to get up there. But it's been a fight, it's been an uphill battle to get that validation and to feel like we belong in that space. So in 10 years time, I want to see myself on bigger and, you know, better stages, you know, just keep going up there basically.
And I mean, that's a little bit, you know, we were talking before about anxiety and being judgy and stuff. I mean, that's scary in itself too. Like, how do you grow something, especially in this day and age with financial risk?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you as a producer having to take on in a something like Drag Queen King, like you've just said, it doesn't have a huge place yet.
Yeah.
So how do you therefore then get money to be able to make it a bigger thing, you know, grants, etc., when you're an individual, not an incorporated society that's able to get pub charity grants?
Yeah, it is a bit of that. And at the moment, you know, I'm just really I've produced six shows so far, so I'm in my infancy, and the shows have been in kind of like low risk venues, so they're like, you know, 200 max, and I'm only doing them for one night, not multiple nights, so there's not a lot of like risk involved, and they've been selling out, you know, they've been really, really successful. So it's bringing it to that next stage, and I don't have the experience with getting the grants and things, but that's that, honestly, like, those things don't scare me. They entice me and excite me. Like, I love a challenge. I don't do anything, you know, I don't do anything because it's easy. You know, I do it because I want it. I want to get there and I'm going to get there, you know. So it's just like, I love what I do. I wake up every day and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing today? Like, this week I was on, like, Shorty, I'm doing an ending HIV ad where I'm dressed up as a 70s, like, strange mustache man. Like, you know, every day it's something exciting. It's not just like, you know, drag and doing these shows. Like, every day it's something exciting, and as long as I have that love and that passion, which I don't see it running out, you know, I'm just gonna keep going, you know. Just,
that's fantastic. Yeah. Now, I was interested too, your comment about the world of against your drag queens and that as well.
Yeah.
So is that because there's males out there that don't think women should be dressing in drag and playing men, or what's that about?
There's definitely a bit of that. I mean, like, it's such an interesting industry because it is, yeah, it's a whole bunch of boys, you know, dressing up in drag, and they're also all gay men. So they don't really see women as, like, they don't really take them that seriously at all. Like, you know, so it's, you deal with a lot of misogyny and you deal with a lot of, you know, issues, but
so there's still actually the glass ceiling.
There is,
absolutely,
which
absolutely
is amazing. Because you think, oh, maybe if I dress up as a man, I'll just get that, you know, that escalator. Maybe there'll be some magic in that. But there's not. There's not. Instead, like, these men who are dressing in women are getting these, like, huge platforms, and women are actually, like, sitting behind, and they're like, oh, well, when am I going to get that? You know. So, but at the same time, you know, I've dealt with. A lot of people in New Zealand and Australia and in the US in the drag scene, and, you know, for the most part it is great, but it is definitely an uphill battle, and you do deal with some sort of, you know, some stuff, and it's a lot.
Do you think having things like RuPaul down here now, is that bringing drag more into the visibility though? Because totally. I think for so long drag was, you know, that kind of K Road dirty,
yeah.
clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely. And it is still that, like, you know, as a drag artist, like, your performance opportunities are performing at like 1 a.m. on a at Family Bar, you know. And I don't drink, so literally I'm at my house getting ready in drag at midnight, listening to Tom Jones, chilling out, and then by 1 a.m. I'm on a sticky gay bar floor, you know, flailing my limbs around and dancing and things. So it's, you know, there weren't really that many opportunities for performing outside of the club scene, but with my shows that I've been introducing, they're more for queer females that don't like to go out really late at night, so I'm always running on drag king time, which is very different to drag queen time, which is very late. You know, drag kings are on time, we're here, we're doing it. Drag queens is like, we're starting in 10 minutes, like 30 minutes, 40 minutes later, the show's beginning. But yeah, so it's interesting in terms of like opportunities and live shows, but you just got to do it yourself. You know, no one's ever handed anything to me and with drag, because it's been all these drag queens, why would they give me the opportunity? So it's been entirely kind of like self-motivated and just like, you know, if I want to do a show, if I want to perform, I got to create an opportunity for me to perform, you know. And with that, it's created such an incredible community of queers and kings and everybody that's really come out and supported it pretty hard.
And that comment you just made of doing it for yourself, we had nods all around the studio.
Yeah.
Everyone was going, oh, yeah.
Yep.
And I suppose in arts, you have to.
Yes.
You have to create your own opportunities.
Which is both a blessing and a curse, because you can do, the opportunities are endless. Whatever you want to do, you know, I'm going to create this drag king wrestling show where we literally fight a giant blob, you know, and pull off drag queen's eyelashes. Like, whatever you want to do, you can do. But also, whatever you want to do, you have to do it yourself. You know, no one's going to hand it to you. You have to really, you know, do the mahi, get the treat sort of attitude. So, and it does pay off, you know. Like, I love it. It's, you know, I love the admin.
So if anyone was listening or downloading, yeah, if they're not listening tonight, they're downloading us during the week.
Of course.
And wanted to know more about how to get into Drag King or this, you know,
yeah,
where could they go?
Best place is probably Instagram. Instagram is a great platform. My Instagram is mx.montymontgomery. Just look up Monty Montgomery, you'll find me. And I've been hosting a bunch of drag king workshops where we get into, you know, how to explore your masculinity, which I think is very, very important for if you're, you know, when you start in drag, no matter if you're a drag queen or a drag king, the first thing that you have to think about is what you love about that gender. Because a lot of drag kings are like queer women and a lot of drag kings are gay men. And when you say, what do you like about the other gender, they're generally like, nothing. I don't really, like, you know, queer women are like, no, like men, no thank you. Or gay men are like, women, no thank you. But I think that once you find out what you love about that gender, your drag is under the basis of, it comes from a foundation of love. But anyway, so I do some drag king workshops here and there, so that's all on my Instagram. Definitely come to Men Engagement on the 20th of May at Phoenix Venue, because that is just the best like introduction to see what it is and how it works and how beautiful and crazy it is. And yeah, there's a whole bunch of other shows. Into the Bush is happening, which is, it has a gender bender take on it. You can catch me performing it at yeah, a whole bunch of other places, which are like, yeah, Cassette 9 and I won't list off right now, but yeah, just the Instagram is the best way to connect with me and ask any questions. My you know, DMs are open. I love to encourage people to give it a go, because masculinity and femininity are not mutually exclusive to gender. I think that it's so, the best thing that I ever did was embrace my masculinity, because it filled me with that confidence that men have, that love that men have. The, you know, there are so many incredible like traits that men have and that women have, and it's not just about gender, you know, like it's about loving yourself. So yeah.
Cool. Fantastic. Yeah. I'm interested anyway. And going along the show, I can't wait to see it. God.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about, how can people find out more about The Farm? How can they get some tickets?
The Farm is opening on the 8th of June. At Titirangi Theatre, which is located in the Lopdell House Precinct in Titirangi Village. So we run from the 8th to the 19th of June, and you can book tickets on www.titirangitheatre.co.nz.
Fantastic. And what's next for you after The Farm?
Well, this is actually my first time directing. So that's quite exciting. I know. And then, yeah, and having to direct my husband, didn't expect that one. But it's, yeah, I'm loving directing. It's something I've wanted to do for a really long time. I mean, last time I was here, we were talking about how I'd done a one-woman show. I did Shirley Valentine, and I'd always wanted to do a one-woman show. Well, I did that. I always wanted to write something, and I just finished writing the panto. So I did that. Panto was supposed, when I was last here, panto yes. was going on at the end of the year, and then COVID hit. Mm. So we still haven't got the panto on stage, but the panto is hitting Titirangi stage at the end of the year. So November, about November 17th or something, it opens, and that's Jack and the Giant Kauri Tree, because it has a local... Mm. A local bent on it. So after directing this, well, we'll see whether audiences like it and whether the theatre will have me back to direct something else or write something else or have me back on stage.
Have you prepared yourself as a first-time director for when opening night occurs? And, you know, you have to let go?
Yeah.
That's when the director's job finishes.
I'm okay with it. I'm actually okay with it. I think having children helps. but I'm actually okay with it. And director friends keep saying to me, oh, you know, it's going to be really hard. No, I think I'll be ready to let it go. And I've produced a couple of shows at Titirangi Theatre, so I've... Yeah, it's not the thing. We'll see. I'll let you know. I'll get back to you, this space about whether I'm cool with it or not. But
whether you can sit in the audience and relax.
Yeah. But it is exciting knowing that The Farm is going to... The Farm will open, and then we've got... You know, I've got a little bit of a break, and then, you know, my first thing I've ever written gets to go on stage.
Mm. Nice.
So it's all kind of exciting for me, and it's all different from... It's from being an actor and... But it's bringing everything I've learned over 38 years as an actor into bringing that back to theatre, and I'm loving that journey at the moment. I'm loving it.
cool.
Congratulations.
Thanks, mate.
That's awesome.
And what about you, Ross? What's up next?
What's up next for me? I'm not sure. You know, that's a really rude question to ask. What are you doing next? Because most actors go from audition to audition. But, yeah, I'm loving the idea of making your own work, which is, I think, the core to growing as an artist. In February this year, I wrote and directed my first short film, which was cool. It's in post-production at the moment. And so just growing into different parts of your job, I think, is the most important part of what happens next. Mm. Who knows what happens next? The life of an actor is always open to the next audition, the next offer, the next opportunity. I mean, I auditioned for something on Friday, so who knows? I might be doing that, or I might not.
And it's that thing, sorry, it's that thing too of, like, still creating your own work, you know, like you just did your own short film, because we're still creating our, we still have to create our own work. We don't sit around waiting for a director or producer to call us.
No, do it yourself.
And you're right, it can be one of those awkward questions, because we've asked it before and they either can't tell us or there's an awkward pause. So it's,
I'm going to be unemployed.
Yeah, it's tough, but good on you. Good on all of you.
Can I just give a shout out really quickly, because it's Mother's Day. I don't want to upset Ross, but Ross actually lost his mother last Saturday at 91, 92. So this is, a Mother's Day for the first time, and he lost his father last June. So he's lost both his parents within 12 months. So I want to go, good on you, Ross. You're here on Mother's Day. Mm. Only lost your mum a week ago, and she was a pretty special lady. So.
She was, and now I'm a lonely orphan.
Now you're lonely. A lonely orphan. So big shout out to Betty Brannigan.
It's hard when you lose your mum. It's 12 years since I lost my mum, and I sang a lot about her today in my show. And, it's hard becoming an orphan.
Thank you all for tonight.
On a happy note.
On a happy note,
But it's those stories, but also the other comments you've made, the power of story. So definitely thank you, all of you, for sharing tonight and bringing your own flavour. We definitely appreciate that.
And, of course, if you've got something going on in the arts world, we want to know about it. And you can find out, let us know, so that we can let the world know, because, of course, you can download us now, which makes us international. Email us, kickarts1@gmail.com, or make sure you're following us on Instagram or Facebook at kickarts.
Emma, we are tight on time. It's been a full-on night. Thank you for having me in.
Hey, no, it's been great. And you did really well. Stephen, he did it without you. Woohoo!
Well, he'll be listening tomorrow on the podcast, I'm sure.
He sure will.
But a fantastic night. Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our listeners. To take us out tonight, we have a wish for you for the week to defy some gravity. So from Wicked, have an awesome week and kick some...
arts.
Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instincts. Close my eyes and leap. It's time to try defying gravity. I think I'll try defying gravity, and you can't bring me down. Accepting limits, 'cause someone says they're so. Some things I cannot change, but till I try, I'll never know. Too long I've been afraid of losing love. I guess I've lost. But if that's love, it comes at much too high a cost. Kiss me goodbye, defying gravity, and you can't bring me down. So if
makes me angry now. And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gone.